an auxiliary.
Okay.
And this a vest, and that has pockets in for certain things. We have a knife and an EPIRB, which is a personal device that if I go in the water, it'll tick off and sends up to a satellite and lets the Coast Guard know where I am. This is assuming I'm out at sea, you know, where it's needed.
Right.
I probably wouldn't use that in the lakes or whatever, unless I was really lost or something.
Really?
And yeah. There's also, I believe, a whistle.
All right.
A whistle.
So if you see someone coming to rescue you, you can make some noise.
Yeah, you can blow the whistle. Now, these whistles are the non-coaching type. They're the they don't have a ball in them.
Okay.
No, I can't blow through them now. They don't have a ball in them. And the thing of that is, if it has a ball in, they get wet and they jam and they won't make a sound.
Wow.
What else do I have in there? There should be, I've switched some of this stuff. That was a big rigging knife that I carry.
That's good.
And I have it all in my SAR vest, which actually is in the car. And there's also a strobe light, which I can attach here, which should turn on. I don't have it on. There we go.
There we go. Very good. So
I can activate that if I have to. And I'm not recommending that you go ahead and buy these things, but a strobe light, if you're at night and you're trying to get back and you're in distress, this may save your life.
Wow.
And it's only $20, I think, $25.
So it's not a huge investment.
Pardon?
So it's not a huge investment.
No. So anyway, this is the best type. So it's a little bit more, it doesn't keep your head above, it doesn't roll you over like
right.
the type 1 life jackets do. But it'll allow you maneuverability and it will float you.
That's great.
Okay.
All right. I imagine gives at least a little warmth to your trunk as well.
It does, absolutely. Well, especially if, and now we're getting into the warmer weather, and so the lakes are starting to warm up, the rivers are starting to warm up a little bit, but you also have to be cognizant of how cold the water is where you're going. And if you've read any cold water literature, you're going to find that you are especially prone to fatigue in about a minute and a half.
Wow.
In the water before you start to lose mobility in your arms and legs. And if you have a life jacket on, you still may lose the mobility, but at least you'll be afloat and alive. Otherwise, you won't be able to keep yourself afloat, and you'll drown. You know, that's as simple as that. There are... they've done a lot of studies on cold water immersion, and they're out on the internet. You can Google that, and they are pretty good, and they're pretty vivid, I would say. and they did a lot of volunteers, either Coast Guard, and they had, you know, these husky Coast Guard guys and Army guys, and they jumped in without life jackets, and of course they were all supervised and everything. And to see how far they could go, oh, I'm going to make it. Oh, yeah. 20 feet from the boat, and they were, you know, done. So, yeah.
So, again, about hypothermia, it's not so much the cold, it's the loss of mobility in
yes.
the water.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, very much so.
Did you want to try that on?
Pardon?
Which one? And the vest?
Sure.
Well. So, now what's that one? Is that
That's another inflatable.
Okay.
And that, there you go.
Nope.
Behind you.
Like that?
Yeah, like that.
It's
yeah,
just a vest,
right.
Literally.
I'm out of frame, though. Come on. Am I in frame now, Vic?
Let's turn
around
and
take a look. You're pretty much in frame.
We'll have to adjust the straps, but other than that, it'll...
So, yeah. I get a lot of mobility, right? Yeah. I remember when I was a child, in the 70s, going out on my parents' boat, and a huge... orange life jacket was strapped upon me, and I could barely, it was like bigger than me. So,
I carry those on board I have four or five of them on board that are qualified life jackets, but we don't wear them unless we have to.
Right.
They have to be readily available, you know. But of course, you're in a paddle craft, you're going to be wearing a life jacket. You know, all the statistics show, and the statistics show that all the drownings occur, or let's say in the high 90s, where people weren't wearing their life jackets.
Wow.
You know, they've fallen overboard and they can't swim. That's one thing about being in a paddle craft. You should know how to swim before you go in, before you do that, you know?
And absolutely.
So, and you've got to be some confident about traveling or with the water. If you're in swift-moving water, you know, there's an undercurrent that goes along. Sometimes it's not as bad as the surface, or other times it's coming down. There could be a dip in the riverbed, and you could have a bad current coming down. You get caught under there, it just sweeps you right downstream. So you've got to be very careful about what water you're floating in, and like I said, be familiar with the area, and have a properly fitted life jacket. And you want to keep your craft under control at all times.
Right.
And you want to keep a lookout. That's why it's good to have a buddy along. Keep a lookout for hazards. You know, you might not see that tree that fell over last night in the water that hasn't been cleaned up or picked up yet.
Right.
And you run into that. What else? Know your physical limitations. Know what you can do on the water, what you can't. And respect the rights of others. You know, there's people fishing along the side. You don't want to go run down through, running into their fishing lines and things like that. So the change in the weather is something to look out for.
That's huge.
You know, you may see, especially here where you see these dark clouds rolling over, and sometimes it hits and sometimes it's in the next block. You know, but it could impact the way what you're doing on the water. So you want to keep an eye out for that, an eye out for other boat traffic. You're in a paddle graph. A lot of times these boaters, especially in their power boat, they can't see you, you know. And if they're going faster, which they, depending on where they are, obviously, they may not be able to see you. Be especially aware of any safety warnings that you see out there. Be cognizant, know how to read them, know what they look like. And most of them are explained on the internet or in here.
Right.
On this, on this book, Federal Requirements. And the big thing, again, is make sure you're visible. Wear bright clothing. You know, that's why this is bright orange and everything, so they can see you. You know, you have things on your boat that are bright colored. So, you know, oh, yeah, I see you over there. You know, that type of thing. So.
Yeah, no, it's really, I noticed that, although traditionally life preservers have been pretty bright colored, sometimes they have some more muted colors out there that are more fashionable,
you see a bicycle going by and you go by and you say, boy, I can't see him for anything because he got dark shirt or dark clothing on,
yep.
And I wouldn't have known him except for that little tiny blinking light on the back of the,
right.
back of the seat, you know, you wouldn't know he's there, you know, so it's the same for... Same for, the boating. Wear your life jacket. Should 100% wear your life jacket. So,
right.
Even when I go out, I wear my flotation. Even on my big boat, I'll wear it most of the time.
Right.
Appropriate clothing. You know, dress for immersion in cold water, if there is, you know, or plenty of sunscreen. Wear a hat or helmet. It's very easy to get dehydrated out there, you know, depending on where you are. And if you're paddling, you're really going to get exhausted because you use the muscles you never used before, you know, unless you're, you know, a rock climber or, you know, an outdoorsman that do it all the time. But if you're the casual boater, you're not going to be, you're not going to be, you think you're going to be as good as you are, but you're not, you know. It's all up here. You should have a compass or a chart or a map of the area that you're in. If you boat a lot, then it's not that important. But if you're going someplace new, you should have at least have some idea of what the area is like and where, you know, the pitfalls and the holes and everything else are. You should have some kind of a dry bag. Carry an extra set of dry clothes with you. Because if you're in swift water, you're going to get dumped. You know, and in fact, you may do it on purpose. You know, roll over your canoe or kayak, and you're going to come back up, and you're going to want something dry when you get out of the water. You talk about a river knife, you know, something to cut away brush or anything that got in your way, or even lines. You know, fishermen have not against fishermen, but you know, you lose lines, and you have lines in the water. And they could tangle up your boat or your oar or whatever. You have no way to get, eliminate that. So you want to be able to cut it away. Drink plenty of drinking water, snacks, you know, that type of thing. Obviously a signal light like I had there, or a flashlight, a good flashlight. You know, these LED flashlights that they advertise now, they're great. You know, you can put them on, and especially for low light, you shouldn't really be paddling after dark. You know, once the sun goes down, call it a day, because you're not going to have any fun. You're going to be, you want to go back, you want to get back to where you put in. Could be miles away, you don't know, but that's why you have to know your area, how far you go, and is there going to be somebody waiting for you when you get in, or are you going to be able to get back to where you started from? UVI protection, footwear. They make the booty, the rubber booties, and of course, they make the wetsuits if you're going to be out, you know, a long period of time. So
yeah, I personally like wetsuits, even for just an outdoor swimming pool this time of year, because they're very cold as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe you want a small repair kit. You know, now most of the paddle craft now are plastic, so they're not inflatable. But if you do have inflatable, something that blows up that you want to, you know, you may get ripped on a branch going by and you have a small hole in it. So you want to be able to repair that as quickly as possible. And or else you're not going to be floating too much longer, you know. So... another thing that's not as important, but a VHF radio and a GPS locator. Now, most of us have locators on our cell phones or iPads that we take along with us. So if you're in a small lake or on the rivers, that's not that important because, you know, the sides of the river are there.
Right.
But if you're out like in a bay, you may want a radio, and you may need a radio just to listen to oncoming traffic if there's anything else, you know, in the water. So, yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's kind of a checklist of
things that you should be taking.
Things you do. We talked about a lot. And if you have any questions, on
sure. Sure. So you referred to the, it's called A Boater's Guide to Federal Requirements for Recreational Boaters and Safety Tips. Tell us a little bit about this book, and you guys are going to be also handing this out at the safety check if people are interested?
Yes, we will be handing these out along with other literature. This basically is the federal requirements is what we test to.
Okay.
There are state requirements, and we also add the state requirements into this. 99 times out of 100, the state requirements parallels the federal requirements. In New Jersey, there is a couple different requirements that you can't run a Sea-Doo.
Okay.
Those kind of vessels after dark.
Okay.
You can't run them in the Cape May Canal. Any of the canals around, you can't run those things through. Let's see, what else? There's a new requirement on boats that are up to 25 feet, I believe, that if they're equipped with a kill switch, which if you fall off the boat, it pulls the switch out and the switch activates, stops the engine. All right, that has to be, if it's on the boat, it has to be used. So in other words, you can't drive the boat and not use it, okay? As of this year, January, I believe, that all new boat manufacturers have to install them on boats under 25 feet. Now, I can't think of what you call them. like the Sea-Doos and that type of thing. They all have those types of switches, kill switches.
Right.
But if now they're requiring on boats under 25 feet. So it's an extra added safety check.
All right.
I know boats, and I inspected a boat a couple weeks ago, and it was built in somewhere around 2010 or 11. But the owner installed one of those in. And if you installed it and it's operating, you have to use it.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not an option then. Even though it's not required to have it on that boat at that, you know, that was built before then.
Right.
2021, you have to wear it. So, yeah. So this goes through and mainly goes through for power boats. And it goes into, you know, registration. I believe in New Jersey, your boat over 12 feet has to be registered. Okay. And you don't, and also goes into documentation. Documentation really doesn't apply here. It applies on a boat that's over 7,000 pounds or 8,000 pounds. And it's a federal, it's like trying to compare it to something. It instead of showing your state numbers, you see the name of the boat, and then you say the hailing port on the back.
Okay.
Chances are that's documented if it doesn't have the state number on the front. You know, and basically it's used if you're going out of the country.
Important.
Okay, you should be. It has to be documented. Also, display of numbers. Now, paddle craft, you don't have to display numbers. But on a powerboat, if they bring a powerboat in, if it's over 16 feet, the numbers, and it's on page 5.
Okay.
The numbers have to be displayed where you have the state. And then there's a set of four numbers and then two letters after it. And the state and the two letters have to be separated by a character width. They can't all run together. So you'd have NJ space 1234 space AB. So
okay.
That's how that would work. And that's on both sides of the boat in toward the bow and forward of that. You would have the registration sticker like your car.
Right.
You know, it says 2021 on it. You know, it doesn't have the month. It has the year on it. So
right. Now, that's all stuff that you obtained from the Motor Vehicle Commission, or is that from...
That's the boat registration.
Okay.
Okay. The vehicle, their car registration is... we don't check the car registration.
Oh, okay.
We check the trailer,
okay.
If it's on a trailer, okay, and the boat registration, see if it's registered, and make sure the HIN number or the hull identification number is the same on registration.
Oh, okay.
Okay, just like your car.
Okay.
Like the VIN number of your car.
Okay.
Next would be... Well, that's documentation, and there's ways to display. The government issues a documentation number. Mine on my sailboat is 692008, but I have that on a plaque down below. It's actually glued to the wall, because it's the way they want it. Plus, my name of the boat is on the outside and a hailing port. So,
wow.
You have to have a life jacket on pages 9 for every person that's on the boat. And if it's an inflatable life jacket, it has to be worn.
All right.
Okay? If it's not inflatable, it doesn't have to be worn, but it has to be what they say, readily accessible. And by that, everybody's got a different idea of what that means. But I think the Coast Guard means that within 3 seconds, you got to have it on. Okay. Or you got to be able to have it. You ever try and put a life jacket on in the water?
Yeah, that doesn't go so well.
Don't try.
Yeah.
No, I mean, really.
Get it on before you end up there.
You want to get life jacket on before you get in the water. And it's difficult. There's new requirements on life jackets, and I don't have them with me. They're not requirements per se on the life jacket. They're labeling. So, in other words, everything's an icon now. There's a one where there's a person, there's a line through it, I believe it won't turn you over. Or there's another one where it will turn you over, but it's all icon labeled now. So people should become, and we'll be doing something like that later, life jacket identification. And there's like 5 or 6 icons that they print out now that are on new life jackets. Life jackets have to be, like I said, readily accessible. They can't be in your case, you know, underneath the seat. You know, they've got to be out where you can get them easily.
So you can.
And, yeah, they shouldn't be stowed or anything like that.
Right. It you can't keep that in a case in the hall down in, you know, down below decks. They've got to be where you can just grab them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And anything over 16 feet, you should have a throwaway throw board. You know, a cushion that you throw if somebody goes overboard.
That you can just pick it up and toss it to them.
Right. They have they make life slings. They have throwable cushions that float that you can swim up to and grab a hold. It'll keep you afloat till somebody gets you. All children under 13, and that's the same in the state, have to wear a life jacket. So you've got to wear a life jacket if you're on an open boat. If you're on an open boat, if you're in a rowboat or whatever, under 13, you have to wear a life jacket. Okay, there's no ifs, ands, or buts on that one. They should be properly fitting, and for small children, they probably should have a crotch strap that comes up underneath and clips. So it won't fly off the, you know,
right,
they go in the water.
Yeah, it could float off of them, right?
Yeah. And they should be approved by weight. That's on page 10. You have a weight requirement on each life jacket, you can see.
Yes.
And I believe this one this is adult life. More than 90 pounds. Okay, this is rated for. Okay, and the chest size on it, but this is rated more than 90 pounds. If you're going to ski, you must have a life jacket on, but that should be rated. They make them rated for 50 mile an hour. It doesn't mean that you're going 50 mile an hour, but that's how they rate them. Okay. And so that means it's not going to come off. Water skiing, life jackets for sailboarding, probably an inflatable like this.
Right.
Probably a manual inflatable. You don't want one that's going to, if you're on a sailboard, you don't want one that's going to inflate when you hit the water because you're going to hit the water anyway on a sailboard. So, yeah. Now, federal law doesn't require life jackets on racing shells, rowing, any racing activities, because they're generally supervised with boats going alongside while they're racing.
Wow.
You notice even on the Olympics, the racing shells are going. You'll see two boats on either side going down in case something happens, shadowing the boats.
So there's already somebody there to help them out.
There's always somebody, yeah. There's always somebody there. So there's all kinds of different life jackets. It's the consumer should be familiar when you go to buy one. Look at the label and, decide which one you want. Do your diligence and look up on the internet. And for the types of boating that you're going to do, if you're in swift water, it requires a different kind of life jacket than it does if you're just going to go on the lake and bay.
Wow. Yeah, so different types for different situations.
Absolutely, yes. Visual distress signal on since we're talking mainly paddle craft, really you just want something that's going to, like a light or a mirror. A mirror would be good. You don't have to use flares or anything like that and carry them. But what I usually tell people is an old CD. Shine it up to one side and use that as a signal if you don't have it. Or a mirror that you can buy signal mirrors. Boy Scouts have, you go over to, what's the Boy Scout place down here? Over on Route 31. For the furniture store.
Tommy's department store?
Yeah, the department store. I'm sorry. The Boy Scout thing. You can get signal mirrors in there, you know.
Wow.
I'm not making a plug for them. But,
but yeah, so I like that CD tip. You got an old computer software program you're not utilizing because it's old. You just use that CD.
Right. They're becoming a thing of the past. Fire extinguishers on boats 16 to 25 foot with the engines on them, outboard engine, you should have one. And they're classified as different types of fire extinguishers. Usually you want an ABC, one that will take care of all kinds of fires. And if you have a boat larger than that, you'll know that you need 1B1 or 1B2 or 2B1s,
Right.
That's how they're classified for use on your boat. So that goes into ventilation on a boat. These are all power boats now.
Right.
They have something what they call a backfire flame control, which is for gas engines only, not for diesels. Because when you have a lot of backfire on the gas engine, and not for the outboard end, this is for inboard. Okay, and there's a screen they put in. So sparks, if you have fumes in the bilge and sparks come out, this will arrest those sparks and you won't have eliminated an explosion for them.
Oh, good.
So,
wow. So
that's been a requirement for quite a while.
Wow.
Nav lights, various different kind of nav lights for the different types of boats.
Right.
For paddle craft, really a good flashlight, and don't go out at night.
Yeah. So if you get one of those situations where thick, dark clouds come up, and that could happen while you're on the water, you didn't expect
fog.
It. Fog, that's right.
So you want something that you're able to signal. What else we got? Take your garbage with you. Don't throw your stuff overboard.
Right.
There's too much plastic in the water now. In fact, you know what the biggest thing with plastic is? These balloons, metal balloons that they have.
Yeah, the Mylar.
You find them all over the bed. Yeah, they go out and they're helium filled. They fly out and they take them out to sea. They take them out in the bay and we run across them all the time when we're out. So we try and have the boat hook handy and, pick them up. Because they can foul up not like latex where they're, you know, you're going to stretch and you know, break, but they're going to foul up your water intake if you're, you know, on a power boat that brings in water to cool the engine.
Wow.
And, yeah, a lot of those metallic balloons, you'll see them out on the water, and they just float along on the top, and, you know,
wow.
All kinds of stuff. Garbage, plastics, including synthetic ropes, fishing nets, and plastic bags, they're prohibited in all areas. So if you have plastic bottles with you, or if a line breaks or whatever, stow it in your boat and just get rid of it when you get to shore. Community or ground food waste, which you won't have on a paddle graph, but I mean any of your food waste is prohibited less than 3 miles from the nearest land, which is not going to happen here. So take it with you. food waste, paper bags, glass, metal bottles, like I said, take it with you. And packing materials, cardboard, that's prohibited less than 25 miles from shore. But eventually all that stuff floats. Some of that stuff floats, you know, back into shore. And that's why they have beach cleanups, because this stuff washes up on beach. I was watching, there's a podcast, Sailing Uma.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard that or not. Right now, it's a couple. They have a 30, 35-foot sailboat. And right now, they're sailing around the world, but they're up in Norway.
Oh,
and they've been up in Norway for the winter. And they're slowly going north. They finally crossed the Arctic Circle a week or 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
And but they hooked up with a group that goes out and cleans beaches up.
Wow.
And up there. And they spent a couple days with them. This is on their journey. They happen to run in. And the stuff that they showed that's washed up, even in Norway, where the water is so clean and pure, the Atlantic, there is lines like this embedded in the shore.
Wow.
And fishing lines and netting and things like that. So there is stuff out there. And it happens in the lakes. It happens on the rivers. You know, people just discard stuff wherever they are. So you want to be cognizant of that.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got reservoirs here and canals, and that's somebody's drinking water supply. So
yeah.
You don't want to just toss it in.
No. The other thing you should really know, if you're a paddler, is rules of the road. And, you know, it's a lot of fun on the road. It's a lot of fun out there. But at least you should be aware. Lee, are we up time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just double-checking. I actually, there's no clock here, so I don't know when my show is ending.
paddlers should know, you know, who has the right of way. And it's really, they don't travel as fast as a powerboat. And beware of your surroundings if there's commercial traffic where you are. Even if there's a lot of motor craft where you are, they're going to be traveling a lot faster than you are.
Wow.
So especially if you're in a channel or crossing a channel, you want to be aware, especially there's a lot of paddlers down in Raritan Bay, and they cross the channel and go over to Staten Island, but you've got these big tankers coming down the channel. They don't stop. They're doing, once they hit the Raritan Reach, which goes across Raritan Bay, they're doing 15 knots, and that's fast for a boat. Paddler, you're lucky if you go one.
Right.
So you can see how fast you would, how fast these come up on you. And, if you see a power boat or a motorboat, don't assume that you can pass in front of it. I always have a rule in my boat. I would try and go behind somebody.
Right.
It's a lot safer that way. The safest way for paddle craft to cross the path of a powerboat is astern. Yeah, you're going to get some wake. You're going to go up and down. But as opposed to being split in half.
Yeah.
You know, with another boat.
No. Well, we all remember the duck boat tragedy. There's been a couple of duck boat tragedies around the country, and there was one in Philadelphia that was huge, where the duck boat was stalled out and was in the path of a freighter in the Delaware River, and that was, or a barge, and that was not a good situation. And on those duck boats, people don't wear their personal flotation device necessarily. They might have it available, but they don't necessarily have it on.
Did I bring mine? If people are coming this weekend,
right?
I just wanted to go.
Yeah, so those are some inspection forms that you have with you?
Pardon?
Those are inspection forms like you're going to be using this weekend?
Yeah.
And that's going to be on Saturday, May 29th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Yes, ma'am.
At the Raritan Township Police Department at 2 Municipal Drive in Flemington. But most of us know that's just off the circle there.
So there is a paddle vessel safety check that we do, and that's...
Okay.
I don't know if you can see that or not, but...
Yep, that's, there we go.
And there are items... that there are requirements, and number one is a sound system, a sound signal, a whistle, a horn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And for people that don't have whistles, we have a supply of whistles that we can give you, and so you meet that requirement. Life jackets, you have your life jackets on you. Not necessarily worn, but...
but they should be available.
Then we look at the overall condition of the vessel. Is the deck and hull sound? Are the hatch covers good? I mean, they're not going to leak. They're not going to bring in water. The deck lines are bungee cords. They're not frayed. They're good. They're attached to the boat, and they're solid. Is the hardware secured? They're not flopping around. You're not missing a screw here or there that may cause a line to fail or slip out. If it's got flotation in it, you know, foam flotation, is it solid? It's not going to move around. Your paddle oars, are they serviceable? I mean, can you use them? Most people have aluminum with the plastic ends on them. They're not all chewed up because you've been on the rocks or anything like that. So,
right.
You know. Navigation light, do you have a white flashlight or, you know, a regular flashlight that you can use?
Right.
After dark, visual distress signals, which would be,
would that be like the strobe light or?
That's the strobe light, the mirror.
Okay.
Things like that. And then does it meet state and local requirements? Well, the state and local are the same as what I've already led, so.
Right.
So, if you're going to other recommendations that we go through with the owner or the paddler, are you dressed for immersion? Do you have a helmet? Okay. Do you have a personal ID on you? You know, you don't have to have everything else. At least carry your ID on you. Do you have a float plan with somebody on shore? Okay, that knows where you are. Do you have adequate food and water? Some protection. And you have good awareness, assess the risk of going out on the water. I said this before, I said 2 weeks ago, I said, ambulances don't float. So the one thing that they remember is an ambulance that doesn't float. Now the rescue squad is going to take a while to get there in their boat on the water. So what are you going to do in the meantime? high visibility clothing gear. Appropriate emergency kit. You might include a first aid kit, knife repair kit, a dry bag with clothes. If you have a self-rescue system, if you have taken skills or taken courses, you know how to use that. Contact information, and that usually if they don't have contact information, we can put that. Give them a sticker.
Oh, okay.
That they can affix to their craft.
Okay.
Not all of them we do that, but if found, contact.
Right.
I mean, we've seen. I've been over at Spruce Run where the boat was tied up there, and all of a sudden it started floating away.
Oh,
it wound
my.
Up on the other side. So, accident reporting. Your owner's responsible for reporting the accidents. and report it to the state police. And, of course, anchor lights. If you anchor out, you need some kind of a light that shows you're anchored there. You should have a pump or bailer. A spray skirt, which if you're in a paddle craft, you know, a lot of them have these skirts to prevent the water from going in.
Right.
Spare paddle. And on occasion, a compass, so you know where you're going. A towboat recovery system, if needed. And last but not least, a marine radio. Not necessarily required, but it's nice to have, especially if you're out in marine traffic. On the lakes, it's not that important, or the river, but because nobody's going to monitor Channel 16, excuse me, here. But they will be out on, you know, like Raritan Bay, if you're going out on the big bay.
Right.
So that's kind of the safety check.
Oh, all right.
Of what we do. Takes about, by the time you go through everything, it takes about 20 minutes to a half hour to do each one.
Oh, wow.
You could skimp here and there depending on what you see. Hopefully we'll have people filling out the top part where the owner-operator and the paddlecraft information, but the rest of it we'll discuss with the owner or the operator of the paddlecraft. So
we'll
try and push as many people through as we can. If we do get a lot, it's going to be, hopefully we won't make everybody mad because they have to wait. Well, we'll have four or five people there doing inspection. So.
Right. And when you, if you pass inspection, that's something that you can use, you can submit to your insurance company, right? And
I'm sorry?
If you pass inspection, they'll have the information that you can submit
on
to the...
On larger boat, yes. That's not a hard and fast rule, but it's something you can... the insurance company may give you a break on your inspection.
That's
you
great.
Show you have your because they know you're safety conscious and you may get that discount. You know, a couple of percent, it all helps.
Right. And so again, this is going to be the safety check that you guys are doing, and this is free. It's voluntary, obviously, but always a good idea because we don't always know, especially if you haven't had a lot of experience or you're new to boating. It's certainly good to know what to find out what you don't know, which is again through this wonderful free vessel safety check, and that'll be this Saturday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Raritan Township Police Department. That's just off the DeVore Circle.
And it's not really meant to be intimidating at all. It's meant to just show you what's required out there on the water and to make you aware of your area and what you're going to have fun doing. We don't want anybody to be unhappy out there. We want everybody to have fun. I guess one more thing I wanted to bring up is the... The poster contest, I guess.
Yes.
We asked. I think we brought that up last time.
Right.
You can fill this out if you could see it. You can fill this out when you come. If anybody made posters, which we asked for people to have.
Right.
The kids, they wanted to do posters on Boat Safety Week, and maybe we'll get a couple. So we'll have a couple of prizes and just to entice somebody to get out.
Right.
I guess one last thing, if you have the paddle craft and you pass, you get a sticker like this.
Ooh, you put that sticker on your boat.
On your boat. So it just lets everybody know that time you were aware and you were made aware and you were found, your vessel's found to be safe and you were found to be safer because of it.
So you're showing everybody that you're doing the responsible thing.
Yeah, yeah. So.
That's great. If people want more information, where can they look and who can they call and all that?
It's not on there.
I think there is. There is a phone number. It says that you can either text or call. It's 574-360-8793. That's 574-360-8793. And there's also an email address of amg22.751@gmail.com. So Looks like there's, it says something about appointments are available, but I'm guessing they're not required.
No, they're not required at all. We thought make it, if we got a lot of people, we'll make it easy that if they do an appointment, they can come in, go to the front of the line or where there's an open spot and don't have to sit in line if that's the case. So we're trying to make helpful. Also, if you camp, you can come down and put your name in, and we'll schedule a date to come out and give it to you. Give your vessel a safety check at your home.
Wow.
If possible. We'd like you to come down to the municipal building, but we still can come out to your home and do do checks there if it's impossible for you to make it. We're going to try to run another one, right, Joanne? Run another one later in the year, depending on how this one goes, and give more people a chance to get their boats inspected and get a little information besides.
That's true.
Jet skis, skidoos, paddle boards, pontoons, you know, all of those count.
Okay, so really any vessel that you could be utilizing out there
on the water.
Wow. Wow. Well, there's a lot there to appreciate and enjoy, and I think we're almost at the end of Random Walk tonight. But thank you, Jim, for coming back and sharing with us the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary and the many great things that they do and keeping us safe during Boating Safety Week. So thanks again.
Oh, you're quite welcome. We enjoyed it.
Great. Well, thanks for being here. I think we have a couple of items on the calendar. You mind if I launch into these, Rosalind?
Yeah, I'll do them.
You'll do them?
Yeah,
okay.
I'll do them real quick. Quickly, the Hunter and Trust Farmers Market kicked off a new season on May 16th with about 25 local farmers and vendors offering an array of organic produce and all-natural beef, chicken, and pork, fresh-baked breads, cave-ripened cheeses, honeys, pies, native plants, etc. The market will be open every Sunday through November 21st from 9 to 1 at DeVore Farm, which is on 111 Mine Street in Flemington. The Acme Screening Room has opened their carpool cinema for the season. You need to buy tickets in advance. They're on Fridays and Saturdays. Please check the schedule for starting time. In case of bad weather, they will reschedule for another night. It's behind the Spokesworks building at 204 North Union Street in Lambertville. Tickets are $25 to $40 per car, depending on the event. All tickets will be online, as I mentioned before. Let's see.
Yeah, you know, there's an interesting add-on because I sent, and it apparently has not gone out yet, an email on one of the things. If you go to the Acme Screening Room's website, you'll see that the Teen Arts Festival has been going on since the beginning of May. It will go on for about another week into June. And there's an actual movie that was made by local teens that is going to be part of the Teen Arts Festival.
Wow.
And it's actually going to be viewed
shown
at
the Acme Screening Room?
Yes, at the Carpool Cinema.
Cool. And the final concert of the 32nd Raritan River Music Festival will conclude this weekend with a performance by the Newman and Altman guitar duo. For COVID safety reasons, the entire festival is in one venue at the Blue Army Shrine in Asbury, New Jersey. All concerts will take place live and in person and can also be viewed in real-time live stream beginning at 4 p.m. on Saturday. Tickets must be purchased in advance to assure social distancing. To purchase tickets, you can go to RaritanRiverMusic.org or call 908-213-1100. And are we out of time?
No, I think we can go.
The Sarawan Conservancy will be hosting a monthly series of live music shows featuring New Jersey artist the Sarawan Mountain Happy Hour. The series the next one is on June 3rd, and it's Jay and Popik and Supernova. Registration's online and only $10 a person, all ages, per show. You can find more information available at sourland.org.
Wow. So a lot of good things going on out there.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back next week with more Random Walk. Thank you for joining us. Oh, it's good. Jim would like us to know that the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary will be doing the free vessel safety check. Whether it's raining or not, you can bring your boat down and find out if you're in good shape. Find out if it's ship shape, perhaps?
Pardon?
Find out if it's ship shape?
Yeah.
There you go. All right, folks, we'll be back next week. Have a good one.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.
Happy Memorial Day.
Yeah.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit.
Hi, I help students gain
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The already hot real estate market is heating up even more. The price of a home in the United States rose for the 10th straight month in March. The S&P Core Logistic Case-Shiller National Home Price is now more than 13% higher than it was at the same time a month ago, last year. The cities seeing the biggest increases include Phoenix, San Diego, and Seattle. Veteran civil rights attorney Kristen Clark is headed to the Justice Department as Assistant Attorney General. Senate Minority Leader from Kentucky Mitch McConnell is accusing Clark of being on the far-left fringe of the political spectrum.
The American people will have an Assistant Attorney General who argued publicly just last year, quote, "We must invest less in police," end quote.
The Dow losing 81 points on Tuesday to close at 34,312. This is USA Radio News.
It's been tough talking to my doctor about constipation with belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. I finally laid all my symptoms out there and how they keep coming back. She said I may have irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C. We agreed it's time to try something different.
Linzess, or linaclotide, is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. Linzess works differently than laxatives. It lets you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort,